Jared and the GM on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The fifth and final installation of Floyd's film study. Next week, we will be live in Indianapolis at the Combine, where Floyd has promised all of his buddies are going to come on the show.
No promise.
Go ahead and add your buddy, your former boss, add Robert Kraft. To the list of interviews we'd like to get at the Combine. Can you get a one-on-one with Kraft?
That would be no.
You and Kraft are very close.
Not that close.
I don't think anyone's getting a one-on-one with Kraft right now.
I wouldn't think.
Except for the Jupiter District Attorney's office. Yeah. And that's where the, attorney present. Okay, it's Floyd's final edition of the Floyd's Film Study, where you take a look at Derrick Henry. We all know the year Derrick Henry had. We didn't know if he fit the offense for the first six games. He was the best running back in the league for the last four. Floyd took a look at the Jacksonville game at Jacksonville, where Henry struggled, and he took a look at the Jacksonville game at home, where Henry had a career day, 238 and four touchdowns. Floyd, without further ado, your breakdown of the film of Derrick Henry.
Well, here's what I saw with Derrick. And it was interesting because Derrick came out after the bye, which was about the time things started to pick up for him, and said that he had, reviewed film, and I think he got tape of literally every run that he had, call for him, and how he ran, and talked to Eddie George, and Eddie gave him some advice, and spent some time with his coaches, and really went through and analyzed it, and I think you could see it. I think that was a bigger part of his change. I think the system changed a little bit for him. I think initially in the first few games, I think everybody pictured him as just an inside, between the tackles type runner. And he can be good at that. I'm not sure that's his forte, though. Especially early, because he was not, there are certain, as a running back, there are certain runs that you have to lower your pads for. He's a tall guy. Now, we have to keep this in mind. He's 6'3 or 6'4 or whatever he is. But he's cut high, too. That is, he's got long legs. So when people get down around his ankles and knees, etc., he has a tough time with them. Tough time from the standpoint that it's hard. He's has a great straight arm, but it's hard for him to get down to them when he's running as fast as he's running. Consequently, he has a tendency to, get tackled or trip or whatever the case may be. If he runs inside and there's early penetration, he has a difficult time adjusting to that penetration. So all these inside runs that he got early in the year, some worked and some didn't, but nothing worked with consistency. If we went into a game and he ran six plays inside the tackles, three were good and three were tackles for loss. So at the end of the day, he averages, 2 yards a carry or whatever it is. I think as the year went on, and after he spent some time looking at what he was doing, and the coaches, I think, also spent time trying to analyze what it was that Derrick could do and do well. Well, they started offering him more outside runs, and I'm not talking about tosses. I'm not talking about instantly getting the ball outside, but on plays more like they ran with the Rams. When you look at the Rams offense and the kind of plays that Gurley ran, I think Derrick got a lot more of those kind of plays, because I think at some point in time they finally realized that these two guys probably have more in common than they do, uncommon. And consequently, he started making yards. He doesn't have instant feet. He's got good feet. He's cut high, like I said, so he struggles with lower things. If you get up into his upper body and you try to tackle him, he is a beast. I mean, he is tremendously strong. He has a great straight arm. I mean, he is very, very impressive with people that attack him up top. Much better receiver than he gets credit for. I think, you know, you in the games that I saw, I think they threw him three or four or five balls. And not only did he catch them all, but he caught them easily. And I think you will see in play action passes, particularly later in the year, but it seemed like it was more in spells. We went into one game, I can't remember which one it was, but they ran two play action passes where they faked the ball to him. He penetrated through the line of scrimmage. They dropped the ball off, and he gained 12 yards apiece on the two receptions. So those kinds of things.
I think that was the Charger game.
Was that Charger game? So those kinds of things he was able to do and do effectively. His pass protection still has a little bit of work that needs to get done. But because of his size, he's going to be able to do that at some point in time. I think that's as much a confidence factor as anything else. So, I mean, generally speaking, I think he adjusted during the year. I think, once again, the coaches adjusted during the year. And by the end of the year, I mean, he was running and running effectively. I mean, he had, what, the best rushing game in the season for any team last year. So, I mean, he's got that kind of breakaway skill, which is unusual for a guy that size. But it's interesting because when you talk to guys that have coached him, one of the first things out of their mouth is they will say, he's a breakaway runner. And you want to say, wait a minute now. You know, this guy's a giant. What do you mean a breakaway runner? Well, you have to see it. And once you see it, then you believe it. But until then, you're kind of skeptical. You know, you don't think, well, wait a minute, he's too big. You know, he's cut too high. He's too high center of gravity. That doesn't, but he is the every bit of that. So, I mean, I think you have to be excited about it.
I don't hear a single negative out of your mouth about Derrick Henry. You know, with Davis, it was, well, he can't do this, but he can do that. With Marcus, it was, well, you know, he struggles with this, but he was great with that. With the offensive line, there was some, with Henry, I mean, I haven't heard.
Can't get past quick penetration.
Yeah, but how many running backs can? I mean, if they break through the line, Ezekiel Elliott's going down.
Oh, Ezekiel can dodge it. He can jump cut it. Derrick can't do that. That's not, you know, it's not unusual. Like you said, probably the majority, especially the majority of big running backs, have a problem with that kind of stuff. Eddie had a problem with that kind of stuff.
Jerome Bettis ever had problems with that?
You know what? Jerome Bettis was big because of his size.
But
he had the feet of a little guy. I mean, he had instant feet. And neither Eddie nor Derrick have that kind of feet, you know.
So that's the one thing. If there's penetration, Henry struggles.
Quick penetration. I mean,
and needs to be better in pass protection.
Yeah, he's got to improve in his pass protection, but he'll do that. I think that's, you know, will come with the territory.
So other than that, though, clean bill of health from the doctor?
What did he do?
No, I'm just talking about you. Like, so other than that, he's great?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with him.
Let the big dog eat. Okay. That's what I like to hear. And, again, Floyd's pointing out how good Derrick Henry is and the coach is having to adjust to him proves how thankful Titans fans should be that Matt LaFleur is in Green Bay where he can screw it up there and not screwing it up here. If there's any takeaway I had from this week, it is that there are certain things Floyd saw on the tape that he disagreed with from Matt LaFleur. And that is all I can ask for because Floyd would never say that because there. If he did, it would be former general manager says new Green Bay coach, not very good.
Let me clarify.
And he knows that if he were to have to admit that LaFleur stunk at play calling, that he would then have to deal with me saying, I told you so.
Let me clarify this all for you. Any new staff getting together, taking over, will go through this learning process. And I think we've seen this with different positions, different coaches. Different. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything that's highly unusual here. And one of the things that should benefit this offense more than anything else next year is the fact that this learning curve has been cut way, way, way down, and that they're going to have a good feel for what Derek can do. They're going to have a good feel for what Marcus can do, for what Davis can do, and I think all of that should be a giant plus.
Okay, so Floyd's breakdown of Derrick Henry was all positive, in my opinion. 615-737-1025. And I've got the one question that matters.
You know how you have kids and you say, don't get on that. Sure enough, they jump right on and you're thinking, didn't I just say don't get on that?
615-737-1025. Can Derrick Henry, I'm asking Floyd this question, can he be the running back next year that he was the last month of this season? And can he be the true workhorse of the Titans, a la Eddie George back in the golden days? We discuss that next on Jared and the GM. It is a Fireball Hot Take Friday, and we're live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. and Mount Juliet on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Drive starts at the one and looking for a little breathing room, and they get that and plenty more. Derrick Henry still going. Stays in bounds. He might go 99 yards for the touchdown. Unbelievable.
Well, you're going to see that Jaguars, they collapse on that left side, and Derrick Henry's just able to find a little bit of a crease, and then he's able to get down that sidelines 99 yards. Images of Tony Dorsett on Monday Night Football right there.
Oh, I mean, once I got in the open field on a 99-yard run, you know, it's gonna take all of them. You know, I definitely wasn't going down easy. So, you know, I definitely wanted to use my stiff arms to my advantage, and it worked. So I wasn't going down easy once I broke.
Derrick Henry, let the big dog eat. Floyd's film study was everything I wanted to hear. Everything. Everything about Derrick Henry. Yeah, we know that if there's penetration, he struggles with it, but that's okay. Can he be a true, what you saw in the film, can he be a true number one dominant workhorse running back in this league?
Can he?
Yes.
Sure.
Will he?
It's a whole other question now. I don't know about that one, but can he? Yeah.
If you were GM, would you build your team around him?
Build my team around him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we're past all that.
I mean, I watched you build a team around a guy who wore number 27.
Well, we built a team, or we were able to run the ball, but I mean, we also had a pretty good defense and pretty good secondary and pretty good offensive line and pretty good quarterback.
And you can have all those things around this guy, but him be the focal point of, you know, got to get a fullback in here that's good to help Derrick. Got to get this to help Derrick. Got to do this for Derrick.
Yeah, I'd say no to that. Nobody in the league is doing that anymore.
Does he have the potential to be one of the best running backs in the league?
Well, define one of the best.
The last four games of the season this past year?
No. Do that for a whole year? No.
Because he would average what? Like, he would end up with like 3,000 yards.
Yeah,
like 45 touchdowns.
Would not only be the best of the season, it would be the best ever. So,
I believe Derrick Henry is the key to this team being 12-4 next year, which is what I assume they will be. Now, they have to get their pass rushers, and everybody has to stay healthy. But again, Derrick Henry. That's all I ask. Derrick Henry. Let's go to your phones on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Lance is up next on Derrick Henry. Go ahead, Lance.
Yeah, so I listened yesterday about the review of the O-line, and I know Floyd said he noticed that we weren't pulling guards very often. And I know for a fact that it's common you pull at least a guard when you run the football. So I was, you know, wondering what he thought about that in particular. Was that something we stopped doing because we changed schemes? I know we went to like a zone blocking scheme. I don't know a whole lot about that, but I was just wondering what You know, were we doing that before and we stopped doing it? And was that why our run game sucked for 75% of the season? Thanks. I'll listen.
Hey.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is we just didn't do a lot of it. In the games I viewed, didn't do a lot of it all season long. And sometimes it's because you can't do it. You know, you're just not good at it. And I understand that. But I think if you watch these running games, like if you watch the Colts running game and you watch when they're running the ball well, I mean, they're pulling, you know, maybe both guards and the center. I mean, they're pulling a lot of people. And they get out in space and do a great job on the DBs. Now, maybe we can't get out in space and do those things. I mean, there may be limitations across the board. But conceptually, schematically, I like the idea of being able to pull guys and get them out into space. And we have, you know, Bruce Matthews, as good a football player as Bruce was not fast at all. As a matter of fact, you would probably say he's slow. But he could pull, he could get out in front, and he was athletic enough that he could get a DB on the ground. And when you're running outside the tackles and you can do those kind of things and get those DBs on the ground or get them screened off, I mean, you've got a chance for big, big runs.
So I would say, too, I think the bigger thing is the coaching. I just believe that they're going to want, and this is me, I think they're going to want to run the ball this year. This is, like, the culture of the LaFleur thing is, it's not that he didn't want to run the ball. It's just that deep down inside, he felt like he was being hired to throw the ball. He was being hired to maximize Mariota and to throw the ball. And so if you're bringing me in to do what I do, which is throw the ball, I'm coming here to throw the ball. And that's what he wanted to do, and that's what he tried to do. And then at the end of the year, he's like, okay, I got to give it to Derek. But he was brought in to throw the ball, and that's what he wanted to do, is throw the ball. And I get it. But this coach, I think, hopefully, will say, okay, what do I need to do to win the game? Because that's all any of us care about.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to, and I think he realizes he's going to have to run the ball. And I would have to say, as a tight end coach, he's probably all in favor of it. I mean, I don't think that will be an issue. You know, the problem, again, and this he ran into this early in the year in particular, is he would go out in games and he would get the ball six or seven times and it would be 0, -1, 0, +2, 0, -2. Well, you can't continue to run the ball if that's the way the game is going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just can't do it. And so, you know, we have to be able to find a way to get some kind of production early to where you feel good enough about turning around and continuing to hand the ball to them.
I mean, it's a lot easier like the Giants game where you start off 7-6, 7-7, 7-7.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a lot easier there. Give it to him every play.
Do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
I just want to believe, maybe more so than I actually believe, but I want to believe that Derrick Henry is a top five running back in the league. That Elliott, Gurley, there's somebody else. Oh, Le'Veon Bell. Elliott, Gurley, Le'Veon Bell. And, like, that's it. And I think Henry can be the fourth best running back in the league.
To go with that 12-14?
I mean, if he is the fourth best running back in the league, you probably are going to be 12-4.
Saquon's up there. Christian McCaffrey's up there.
Hey, what happened when they played each other? When Henry and Saquon played? I know somebody had 30 yards, and I know somebody had 170. And I'll take the guy who had 170. Derrick Henry. Let the big dog eat. And if they had given him the ball in the Dallas game, he would have had more yards than Zeke, too. So what do you guys say to that, Floyd Reese?
Say to what?
Who'd you rather have, Saquon or Derrick Henry?
Who would what?
Who would you rather have, Saquon or Derrick Henry?
Oh, you're basing what you're saying.
170.
Off of one game.
170. To 30.
One game.
I'll take 170. And, you know, combined, they're 200, so maybe I'll take Derrick Henry. 615-737-1025. The Preds are in first place for the first time, and I can't remember the last time they were in first place. What does that mean to us? What does first place mean? What does the Central Division mean? What does home ice mean? Do those mean anything? We will discuss that next. Jared and the GM, Fireball Hot Take Friday. I love Fireball just as much as I love the fourth best back in the league. That's right. I love ice-cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. It tastes so good, and it goes down so smooth. And this weekend, I'm going to the big concert tonight downtown. Probably going to have some Fireball. Ice-cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. It's the best. Ignite the night. Please do it responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's got to be better in these last 20 games that you talk about? Where can this team improve in order to be ready once day one of the playoffs start?
Well, I think we've talked about that a lot. It's we haven't found that consistency. It's been, you know, we've had a good game and, you know, got kind of off night and good game. And, you know, if you want to be at the top of the league, you can't do that. And I think just finding that balance and that you know, we gotta be desperate. You look at the standings and, you know, right now, I guess we just passed Winnipeg. So, you know, it's a great time of the year. And, you know, like I said, you look at the standings, how tight it is, and every game matters.
So the standings clearly matter to Pecorine last night. The fans can talk. Home ice this time last year was the number one discussion. It's obviously not the number one discussion right now. But it clearly first place mattered to Pekka in that clip right there. The Predators are in first place. And Keith Jones last night on the NBC Sports postgame says, hey, home ice will matter between Nashville and Winnipeg.
When you listen to Pekka, though, it's so interesting because we are watching the standings every single day and watching it closely, but so too are the players, and they know just as well how close things are out west. So these were big 2 points, and Pekka Rinne has been a big reason why.
He has, and those points are critical. You want to finish ahead of Winnipeg, no question about that, because home ice can be so important in two rinks that there really is a home ice advantage. Nashville, a great place to play in front of the home fans, and the Predators have a tendency to feed off of their crowd. Winnipeg, very similar in that regard.
I'm sorry for the music that NBC decided just to put in there, but Keith Jones says home ice matters between Nashville and Winnipeg. Floyd Reese, do you agree with Keith Jones? Does home ice matter in a Winnipeg series? And do we need to care about this first place chase?
Well, I think this is just like anything else in this. If you know, if you think it matters, then it probably matters. If you don't, then, you know, it's not. Now, would you rather open with them here? Sure. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, given that, they've had pretty good success here in Bridgestone. And so, you know, you have to be concerned about that part of it. But I don't, I don't know what there would be negative about having home ice. I mean, so I would say, sure, if you can.
No,
get it,
but
get
I mean,
it.
Like, really care about it. Like, really, it matter in this round with Winnipeg, even though you fought for it last year and it didn't work out. Does it really matter to you, or is it just, yeah, okay? I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm choosing either for it or against it, I'll take it.
No, but either it's big time and, you know, you're going to go all in for it, or, you know.
Oh, I don't think we're going all in for it. I think we went all in for it last year.
I think we've got to stop using last year as the gold standard or whatever. We got to stop using last year as, well, if it didn't happen last year, then it won't happen this year. Or if it didn't matter last year, it won't matter this year. I mean, Kansas City lost the AFC Championship game at home. So now should the Chiefs, who cares if we get home field advantage throughout the playoffs? That doesn't matter. You can't tell me they won't think like that in Kansas City. They'll want home field advantage in the playoffs. They'll want another AFC Championship game at Arrowhead. And I feel like you should feel the same way.
Well, I think home ice does matter.
I think we just act like it doesn't matter.
No, no.
But it does matter.
This is my point. My point is, if you believe it's really important, it is. If you believe you can win on the road, if you believe you can win in Winnipeg, you believe, then it, I don't think it's anywhere near as important. Now, if you don't think you can win in Winnipeg, you don't think you can win in Colorado or St. Louis or wherever it is you're talking about, then it becomes an issue because you need the extra one. But if you're a good road team, if you're a team that can go out and win anytime, any place, then I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah, but you don't think it mattered to New England to get home field advantage?
I don't. I think they would have won anywhere they went. I don't think it mattered. They went to Kansas City, beat Kansas City.
Right, but you don't think that they weren't sitting there saying, hey, Kansas we need City. Home field advantage.
Let me say this. If they had a choice, if they would have had a choice, would they rather have played that game in New England? Absolutely. But does that mean you that you know you're done because you're going to Kansas City? No, you just got to go to Kansas City and win.
No, but they would have done whatever it takes in order to get home field advantage because they value home field advantage. There's no doubt they value it, and I don't think we can look at home ice just because it didn't work last year and act like it wouldn't matter in a Winnipeg series this year.
If you don't think you can win in Winnipeg, I agree with you. But if you don't think you can win in Winnipeg, you're done anyway.
I'm not saying that I don't think they can win in Winnipeg.
Well,
but just because
you're making it sound like it.
Well, would you want home field advantage when you had the Titans and you had to go to Indianapolis and Jacksonville?
Once again,
and
yes. Let me see if I can make this clear. If you're giving me a choice, yes, I would rather play at home. But I'm confident that we can win anywhere we go. So if I don't end up with home ice, I'm not quitting. I'm going to go ahead and play.
I think home ice is going to matter in a Winnipeg series. I mean, I don't think that we should let two wins get in the way of the fact that there is no guarantee of a Winnipeg series because you would have to beat St. Louis first or Dallas, and they would have to win their series. And I don't know if anyone's noticed, the reason that you're in first place for the first time in forever isn't because you're winning games. It's because they're not winning games. So as much as we've complained about the Predators this year, Winnipeg, they haven't won a game, it feels like, in weeks.
Oh, that's what I said earlier. I mean, we're talking about us. We're griping about what we've been through, and we're in first place. I said, put yourself in Winnipeg right now. I mean, they can't be happy at all.
And if you don't win the cup this year,
winning, and now they're not in first place.
And if you're them and you don't win the cup this year, you may never win the cup. The way their cap situation is, they really have a small window. And so there may not be a Winnipeg series. I just am convinced that ultimately the Predators have got to get back to their roots a little bit. But once they do, I think home ice will matter. I just am so turned off by the idea that because it didn't work last year, that it all of a sudden doesn't matter.
Let me say this. This is your typical fan here. Before, when it didn't look like we had a chance for home ice, didn't matter. Remember last year? Didn't matter. Nah, doesn't make any difference. Now you're in a position where you think you can get some home ice.
Keith Jones said it matters.
And now it's a big deal. Now it's the end all of it all. No. You
got to
go one way or the other.
I asked Crispy about this like 3 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago, and I said, Crispy, are we undervaluing home ice because of what happened last year? And Crispy looked at me and said, yes, yes. And I said, okay, then I agree with Crispy. And if they can get some home ice, great. Now, the President's Trophy, that puppy is cursed. And I'm telling you, if this Tampa team loses at any point in the playoffs and does not win the Stanley Cup, then I will know for sure that the President's Trophy is cursed. Then I will know for sure. Then there will not be any sort of question. 0% question. If this, as good as this Tampa team is, if they lose, then I'm over it. Then I never want to hear about that thing ever again. But the home ice, you know, against Winnipeg, I think it could matter. I'm just not willing to say that it mattered last year, and now just because last year didn't work out the way you wanted it, that it means that it doesn't matter now in the future. It can't all be, well, just because of last year and last year and last year, and last year's over now. You know, this is this year. And I think you're kind of turned off because of last year. Whereas you lost home playoff games in your career. You ever wanted to not get home field advantage? Nope, you always wanted home field advantage. And I feel like that we should treat this the same way. We should not get caught up in what happened last year. So that's the question for the caller. 615-737-1025. How much does first place and a home series with Winnipeg matter to you? 615-737-1025. Floyd, like a typical fan, says, well, last year didn't matter, so it doesn't matter now. But how do you feel? 615-737-1025. Jared the GM. We'll wrap this show up next on that. And the most underhyped game of the weekend, and I don't get it. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
The standings are so tight, but for now, at least you are in first place in the Central again. That's got to be good to see your name up there as well.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, such a good division, and yeah, you always want to move up on the leaderboard. Obviously, we got some games in hand, but for now, we're in the first, and we're going to play hard to stay there.
So obviously first place matters to Roman Josi. Does not matter to Floyd, apparently, here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We'll go right to the phones as promised. And, of course, I've got the most underrated game of the weekend that I just don't hear a lot of buzz about. Should be a lot of buzz. Margaret, though, is up next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. What's up, Margaret?
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
So I think home ice actually really matters.
Thank you.
But I have a big but. It blows my mind why people in Lexus Lounge or wherever those great seats are, why they are not in their seats for the game. And maybe you can answer that for me, because it looks so awful on the TV screen to see. It seems like our arena is empty, and I know that's not the case, but the people aren't in their seats.
So Margaret's not happy about that. Thank you for your call. Number one, I think the playoffs, it'll be a lot different than the regular season. The playoffs, you know, people go to the bars a little bit, hang around a little bit, you know, do that. Playoffs, it ain't like that. I do think Nashville's crowd is a late-arriving crowd, especially during weekday home games in the regular season, because the game starts at 7 o'clock. People get off work, what, 5, 5:30? So people are getting off of work, and then you got to find a place to park downtown and, you know, go out to eat because there's so many bars and restaurants in the area. You go out to eat. You roll into the building at 7:10, 7:15, and so you miss the puck drop, but it's not the end of the world. And I think that Nashville has a lot of that. I've always noticed that with Predators games. It's not like an L.A. Dodgers game, but they definitely, in my opinion, have a late-arriving crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I told you I had any clue. I got no idea why they're not sitting in their seats.
Well, you know what it is. It's the same with the Titans. I mean, you know, people are too busy on the other side of the river. And then, you know,
oh, yeah, there's people all partying kinds over of activities there, downtown.
And that's fine. Like, I don't – and you'll notice this during the period breaks, too. Like, there, it'll take about 2 or 3 minutes when there's the end of the period to the next – to where people – fill it in. And that's just reality. I don't think it's a bad fan thing or anything like that. And honestly, I don't even notice it on TV. So maybe the caller notices it. I don't notice it on TV when I'm watching games on TV. Like last night, now that I got the elliptical at the house, I call it a cardio game. If I'm going to watch a game, got to do 40 minutes of cardio while watching a game. It was a cardio game last night. I didn't notice there being like a lack of people in the Lexus seats, but I could be wrong. I don't know. So the most underhyped game, there's two, in my opinion, two big games this weekend that really matter here. And then the rest are just, you know, we'll watch them in the AAF. But number one is Colorado versus the Predators tomorrow. And if the Predators lose to Colorado tomorrow, that would be a major letdown. Like, I wouldn't say it's crushing, but it would sting that you get to first place and all of a sudden you lose to Punch and Judy, Colorado. And you've got Edmonton coming up and then a huge week next week with St. Louis and Winnipeg. So for me, if the Preds lose tomorrow, I think that that would be a big kick in the rear end if you're a fan.
Yeah, I mean, we can't lose either one of these next two. I mean, we said before it would be nice to get two of the three. Well, after last night, I think, and now we know that, you
Connor
know,
McDavid's out.
McDavid's not going to play. Then you know that's
Floyd wants three of the three.
Should be a cinch. So now we're going 3-3.
And then the other one, Tennessee LSU. This time last week, all anybody could talk about was Tennessee and Kentucky. And now Tennessee loses that game, does not play great against Vandy, and I just don't feel the hype for Tennessee LSU, which is, in my opinion, a huge game tomorrow. I should say tomorrow morning. Tomorrow at close. 11 o'clock. That is a huge game. I mean, this could be for first or second place in the SEC. LSU lost to Florida on Tuesday night, and yet I just don't feel any buzz for this game, and I don't. And maybe it's because the UT fans are fickle with basketball, and they look at their team right now, and they're not happy with what they're seeing. But, Floyd, I don't feel the buzz for this game, and this might be the biggest game so far for the season for UT.
Well, I mean, the winner of this game could be tied or the number one team in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could, you know, if Tennessee wins, you're going to end up with 1-2 or 1-3 or whatever, that wherever it ends up. But, I mean, I think this is going to be a great game. I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be at LSU. It's going to be a different time. I don't know how that's going to affect the teams. I hear a lot of people making it, you know, trying to find logic or reasoning to, you know, why it would hurt one or help the other, and I'm not sure of any of that. But I think, you know, we're going to get a good look at Tennessee facing another longer, leaner, taller, athleticer, more athletic kind of a team. Not as, you know, they're not playing with the quality of a Kentucky. But in a lot of ways, they look more like a Kentucky or more like a Duke team. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a great challenge.
Well,
and I'm looking forward to seeing Tennessee go out and play a team like that and get a nice win. I mean, that's what we need to have happen.
Jimmy Dykes on the SEC Network was breaking it down. He believes the Kentucky game was a good wake-up call for Tennessee. And I'm
Tennessee lost to Kentucky. Rick Barnes got his guys' attention fully, probably for the first time in 2 or 3 weeks, communicating with Rick in the last couple of days. And Kentucky punished Tennessee with a physical style of play. LSU can do that every bit as good as what Kentucky did. They got grown men on the glass. But I think Tennessee's going to go down there now with a renewed concentration, a renewed focus on in terms of what is Tennessee toughness. They know what it is. They were soft, and they were a little selfish in their game at Kentucky. They were phonies to who they really are in terms of what they value. I think that's out of their system. This will be a major, major battle Saturday in Baton Rouge. Two titanic teams right now that can go deep, deep in that NCAA tournament.
Let me just state for the record, I believe that Tennessee was way more phony on Tuesday night against Vanderbilt than they were on Saturday against Kentucky.
I don't know where they get all that against Kentucky.
I told you, they just lost, and so when they lost, they're like, okay, we didn't play well, we lost, so we didn't play well, and then they played terribly against Vanderbilt, and they won, so they didn't say the same things that they had said before. But I thought they were way more phony against Vandy than they were against Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Not
predictions.
Even close.
Predictions. Preds, Colorado. Floyd, do they take this one, or does the up-and-down season continue and they go down, and just when everyone's starting to get their hopes up, they crush you?
No, they've got to win this.
Okay, and then LSU, Tennessee.
I want to go Tennessee, but my gut tells me LSU.
I'm taking LSU, too. I was hoping you would take Tennessee, so at least one of us would take the home team. I'm taking LSU. The number one reason is the game is at LSU. The number two reason is Tennessee, man, there's something wrong with them right now after the Vandy game. It's one thing to get walloped at Kentucky. It's another thing to play the way they played against Vandy. But the real kicker for me is that they act like it wasn't a big deal the way they played against Vandy. And that tells me that they're not they're focused mentally or whatever.
Yeah, these. I mean, both those games are too nonchalant. Kentucky, you know, because of Kentucky. But the Vandy game was just too nonchalant. I mean, that's, you don't, I don't think you come off of a, come off of a Kentucky and play that way against a state rival.
And I'm going to take the Preds tomorrow. I was thinking about it. I was thinking about taking Colorado, but I'm going to take the Preds. That's going to do it for us. Speaking of the Preds, Preds Insiders comes your way next. You might want to turn off your microphone before you slam it over to the side. It would be greatly appreciated. Preds Insiders is coming up next. Ryan Porth and Chase McCabe, we are out of here. We will be back Monday at 2:00.